when it's like, okay, petroleum jelly and the rectal probe, it's sort of like, are you, is this sort of like set up so as to use said probe? And I'm just like, yeah, this, the first half is very uncomfortable, and the second half makes it still more uncomfortable. And not for what you would do, just for sort of what that implies. And it's just like, oh, this job, no.
What's poppin', y'all? Welcome to Post Finale. I'm your host, Ankit Madeira. I'm an actor and a musician who hasn't seen a lot of films. So to make my friends happy and potentially provide a new perspective on some popular films, I am on a quest to change that. I'm not on this quest alone, however. This week, I am joined by William Hayward, who is the host of the YouTube channel William Hayward Painter. William, how are you doing?
I'm doing really great, Ankit. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. We got connected through a mutual friend of ours named Brian. Hi, Brian. I have no idea if he's even listening to this. You have managed to get on the show before Brian. This is how busy our schedules are. So there we go. But it is a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for being here. Do you want to tell the people a little bit about yourself? Like, you know, what do you do? You're an artist as well. What types of stuff do you do?
The story is for me is, I was studying, was at art school in the northeast of Scotland, which is where I'm from. And in 2018, that's when I graduated. But from as early as like 2016, I've been on YouTube. I've been making videos there. And I think that with my channel, with William Hayward Painter, because that's my name, William Hayward, and then I added Painter because that's my art discipline. And yes, yeah.
You know, people know what they're getting.
It's true. Well, I mean, I'll need to update my my trailer that I have on my channel, because I called it that so that it answers that question of, what are you doing, William? What is this? I'm losing productivity looking at this. What is this? Like, you should just do one thing only.
Like, see, people tell me that. Don't worry. It's not like I just do one thing. I do multiple things. Mm-hmm. Something's got to work.
Yeah, though the story is, because I began making videos of myself painting when I was working on projects back in the art school days, and I kind of figured I would just do that and, you know, exhibit and sell my work and show my process. And in the wake of just needing a bit of a break from education, just a little tiny bit, and the pandemic, the post-pandemic, I've still been making videos. I've just been not doing what I was doing at the beginning. And at some point, I do want to get back to my roots, to what my wheelhouse is. But no, I've spun off my channel, so it's got lots of different things on it now. And it's still art-related. It's still artistic. Like, exploring interests that I have in a slightly different way, but probably simplest if you folks go and have a look. But the key thing, it's fun being on this podcast today because this is a podcast about movies, and I've sort of veered to talking on my thing more about movies. So yeah, no, this is really fun. Yeah. But
Of your videos. They're very fun. Ooh. They are an absolute blast. So ladies and gentlemen, I will link it down in the description and we'll talk about it again later. But this week, speaking of movies, we are talking about Joe versus the Volcano. Now, before we get into what I knew about it going into the film, when did you first watch the film? When did you first watch it? What were your first thoughts? Do you remember when you first watched it? Why do you enjoy this film, etc.?
Well, Ankit, it's a funny story. Similar to yourself, I've seen this movie approximately once all the way through. So this is we're on more of an even keel this time, because I know that the point of your show is that you're not to have seen the movie, but your guest has supposed to have seen it, and your job, having watched the 50% of it, is to try and figure out what the rest of the movie is going to be. But the thing is, it's a movie I'm very familiar with, despite only seeing it once all the way through. Because, so, no, to answer the question, when did I see this film properly? a couple of months ago I saw it, and did really enjoy it. And I think, though the first I'd heard of it, the YouTube channel, Red Letter Media, excuse me, Red Letter Media, one of the big, big YouTubers, you know, groups there. They have a show called Review. That's RE:View. And it was some of the guys from RLM talking about how much they enjoy the movie. So I'm not going to say my thoughts on it are fueled by what they think, because it's not. Because I've, you know, just listening to them, thinking it through, watching it, yeah. But no, much like them, no, I enjoy this movie quite a bit. Yeah.
Nice. Very good. Well, what I know about it going into it is Tom Hanks. And that's because he was on the poster. This is legitimately all I know. I've never heard of this film. I didn't even know this film existed. Nothing until this film was recommended to me by a future guest who is going to be the guest for the second half of this film. But I had never heard of this film, and the only thing I know about it is Tom Hanks, and it is solely because when I Googled the film to where to find it, his face showed up because he's on the poster.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful. Well, why don't we jump straight into the film? Let's figure out what is going on and why is there a volcano? I have no idea. Going into this film, my initial thoughts is that it's some weird sci-fi movie and it's going to be like Joe is the main character. I'm assuming Tom Hanks is named Joe and he's probably going to be fighting a volcano, like he's gonna be like one of those wildlife firefighters, and it's gonna be him trying to stop a volcano from destroying a town, like kind of like a reverse Pompeii where, you know, the volcano exploded and then destroyed the town. I feel like it's gonna be him like going in to make sure the town doesn't get destroyed. So I think that's what's kind of happening here. Like, maybe not even, like, sci-fi, but, like, just that's the idea that I have. Like, that's what's going on. That's what he's going to be doing. Spoiler alert, ladies and gentlemen, from as far as I've seen, that ain't what he's doing. So, we start out in the film. Once upon a time, there was a guy named Joe who had a very lousy job.
Yeah.
Sucks for him.
yeah, this is the relatability and affinity to it that I think the guys from Red Letter Media were having, but we'll need to get back to what the story is. You said sci-fi film. I think just looking at where Joe works, which we'll get into, I'm like, yeah, no, there is something of a sci-fi component here, you know, and just for the theme there of the system. And I said to my mom that I was going to do this podcast, and I said we're going to do a movie, Joe versus the Volcano, and she's like, "Is it a children's film, William?" I was like, "No, just from the title." I was like, "No," I said it's not, and I was explaining what it is, which we obviously can't do because we can't do that now, but we will do another time. But I was like, no, it can't be because this. And I think it was just based on the movie title. But yeah, Joe works a job that,
it's a lousy job. So we open, we see someone stepping out of a car into a puddle. It is Tom Hanks. He is dapper as ever. I'm going to call him Tom Hanks until we inevitably learn his name. Like I said, I'm pretty sure his name is Joe. But we then see an old woman eating a sandwich which has a cigarette in the sandwich. it's a choice. And Tom gets out and he heads into a factory where he works, and everyone else that's in this massive group of people seems to work there as well. We see a sign and it says American Panascope, a subsidiary of HE Long Island, New York. I might be mispronouncing something there, but that's what it says. We then see another sign and it says a new generation of surgical tools. And so I was like, is their job making surgical tubes? Is this what they're doing? I don't know. Like, are they making syringes? What's the lousiness of the job? Why is it lousy? I need to understand why he hates the job, because already I'm not having good faith that Joe's job is a wildlife firefighter, which is what I was hoping he was going to be. We then see the next sign, home of the rectal probe. I feel very wrong.
Yeah. And the something this movie does. There's lots of I'm sure as we'll get into, there's like allusions to the digestive system. Just maybe not in the production design, but I think you see like imagery, like, you know, going with that text quite often, and it's just sort of like, you know, like, this is uncomfortable. Yeah.
It's like, this isn't how I thought I was spending my Sunday evening, which is watching a film about the home of the rectal probe. Wasn't on my agenda. I thought I was gonna see someone fight a volcano. Apparently not. So
yeah.
The next sign says, HE, 50 years of petroleum jelly. I'm very confused about what this factory actually does. So, as Tom is walking through the gates, the sole of his shoe breaks, and then he steps in another, puddle, and he then looks up to the sky, like, why me? Like, just looking at God, like, why? Why is this happening to me? It's beautiful.
Which comes back, sorry.
Oh, does it? Sorry, I haven't seen it yet. No.
Sorry, wait, that's set up. It's like we'll see, we set something up here and it means something very different over there.
Very fair. That's called foreshadowing. So
it's foreshadowing, sorry.
I do enjoy how all the extras we're just told, do not look happy, walk straight, and ignore Tom. Like, I feel like those were the three instructions they were given on set. Is just follow the path, don't have any expression of happiness or sad, just have zero expression on your face, and just ignore everything else that's happening around you. And then we see a cute dandelion, which manages to miss many shoes, and then it is crushed by a shoe which looks like a woman's shoe. And it was such a specific shot. I feel like this woman's shoe, or this woman, or something about this dandelion is gonna come back. Because otherwise, why would it be so specific as to being crushed, and that to specifically by a woman's shoe? It's not like it's crushed by any random shoe. Because all the other shoes that we see in this moment are all just like normal black dress shoes that you would see. But then the one that crushes it has a little bit of a pattern and a heel to it. So they head into the factory. We see another large sign, because we are in the factory of signs, apparently. But it also confirms we are at the home of the rectal probe. And we have 712,765 satisfied customers. Quick question. Is all they make a rectal probe? Is this the only thing they're making in this factory? If so, I understand why it's a lousy job.
Well, I don't know, because, like, again, we might want to cut this out depending on the rating of this show. I don't know, but like,
oh, we talk about everything. We just bleep out the swear words.
Okay, well, oh no, I don't swear all that much. It's not that. It's just what I'm it's just like the themes of what you're talking about. But when it's like, okay, petroleum jelly and the rectal probe, it's sort of like, are you, is this sort of like set up so as to use said probe? And I'm just like, yeah, this, the first half is very uncomfortable, and the second half makes it still more uncomfortable. And not for what you would do, just for sort of what that implies. And it's just like, oh, this job,
fantastic.
No more probing. Oh.
We had to go there. Well done.
Well, we can cut that.
No, that's staying in. We are not above the dad jokes.
No. I think something with this movie. I don't know if it's credited in the prologue that we're in now, but production design by Bo Welch, the legendary Bo Welch, who he's worked on a lot of Tim Burton's movies, and Barry Sonnenfeld, who did the Men in Black movies as well. And we'll come back to Joe versus the Volcano, but no, just the design of everything, especially when we get to like other buildings, like other scenes that we'll see later on. It has kind of this George Orwell sort of world where like I'm being oppressed.
Okay. Yeah, I definitely did get that feeling as I was watching this. Like the feeling of oppression, the feeling of blocks, like everything kind of has to be systemic, like there is a set structure kind of deal. I definitely got that feeling as I was watching the film. But good to know that it all stemmed from this person's creative imagination.
So,
we see lots of crates, and there are some strong men carrying them. We also see someone welding. Tom is just walking down some stairs. And I was like, oh, we had another sale, because someone has pulled the lever, and it has now gone up to 712,766. Satisfied customers, which another thing, I feel sorry for that guy. He just pulls a lever every time they make a sale. Like, that sounds like a horrible job. Poor guy.
Like, it's
poor
a
guy.
Grind. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That man has pulled that lever potentially 712,766 times. And, like, is it like, you know, imagine that, like, you know, he clocks out at 5 p.m., but then, like, you know, a sale of 100 goes through, and then he gets in at 7:30 in the morning or 8 in the morning for his shift, and it's just like, you know, he gets there, and then it's just like, oh, great, now I just have to, like, crank out 100 of these real fast so that, like, you know, by the time everybody else gets there, we're up to date. Oh. So much stress for that poor man who has to pull the lever. He deserves a pay raise. I don't care how much he's getting paid. He deserves a pay raise.
Oh, completely, yeah. No, it's very, and this gets to something, this is one of the key moments, key bits of the movie. It's the whole thing, it's very soul-destroying, don't we think?
Oh, yeah.
The lousiness of this job.
Yeah, there is some beautiful play on words later as well with that. So we see a guy and he's dropping some goo into some buckets. And then finally, Tom Hanks clocks in and we see that he has arrived at his job. And he works in the advertising department. We hear someone is arguing with someone named Harry, saying that he knows he can get the job, but can he do the job? He doesn't want to argue that with him. This is literally the entire argument that this man has on the phone. And these are the first words that we have heard the whole movie. And the only words we hear for like 2 minutes of the film. It started driving me crazy. I was like, why? Why do we need to hear this so much? Like, again, this soul destroying. It's just destroying your soul. You're like, why am I watching this? Why is this the dialogue? And I found myself questioning that seriously. I was like, why is this the dialogue? What is going on? Why is this? I hated it. It was so annoying. But we also see some people with typewriters. And also, while that person was annoying, two things. One, very well done to the actor because he did his job. If his job was to be annoying, he nailed it. I don't know what his job was and what his direction was, but if it was, hi, make them annoyed, got it. Perfect. Two, this poor man is an actor. Did they give him three lines to play with? And we're like, you can just keep repeating these three lines. This is all we need from you. We don't actually need more from you in this film. You're going to get paid to just say three lines. Like, cool. So Tom goes in, he makes some coffee, and to really hit it home on the crappiness of the job, there's a flickering light above the coffee station. The coffee station is full of stains. The light goes off, and then he tries to flicker it back to life. It's bad. He works in a dump. And meanwhile, we learn Mr. Waturi is the name of the person that has been given three lines to speak with Harry. And Tom starts poking at his coffee because there are lumps in it. And then he heads to his desk. Ladies and gentlemen, this is just a PSA. If there are lumps in your coffee, maybe don't drink the coffee.
Affirmative. No. Mr. Waturi is the guy who we see on the phone on our side, yeah?
Yeah. Mr. Waturi, yeah. He seems like the boss of this advertising department because he has a little placard with his name on it, which insinuates that he has power of some sort. And he also has this trophy thing on his desk, which looks like it has two bulbs on top. And then it's like an F kind of thing. I don't know. It's hard to describe exactly. Ladies and gentlemen, Pranav, if you're able to just grab a screenshot of it, toss it up for the edit for those watching on YouTube so that they can see what this looks like. And we find out that it is an artificial testicles prototype. So really sticking with the anatomy theme that we've got going on here.
we went from, I'm just going to say it, Ankit. We went from the digestive system, the colon, and the anus, and now we've gone the other way. It's like
I'm not
some sicko. I'm just saying that this is what the movie is doing.
No. You are not a sicko, my friend. You are stating facts, and we respect that. You are simply stating the facts. You're just laying out the journey for us.
Sorry, so, great production design, Bo Welch.
Woo, thank you, Bo. So Tom heads over to his desk and he then looks in his file cabinet, pulls out a lamp. And it seems like he is trying to make sure that nobody sees him with this lamp, kind of like the lamp is a little bit of a secret and that he shouldn't have the lamp almost. Like, ooh, what's sketchy about the lamp? And the light above him keeps buzzing as he's pulling out this lamp, and he gets annoyed by it and hits it to get it to stop. And I was like, that's not going to work. It worked. Do not know how, but the buzzing went away. And I was like, oh my goodness, Tom Hank, you are a miracle worker. So he then turns on the lamp, and it plays like a cute little tune, and it starts to rotate slowly. And you have one side, it's red, and that's the side that's closer to him, and the other side is blue, and that's the side that's further away. It's kind of like split half and half. and it plays this cute little tune. It reminded me of like the tune that would play. Did you ever have those like boxes that you would open up and it would play like a tune and you'd have like a little dancing ballerina inside of it?
I'm familiar with those. Yeah. I think my mom or my granny or somebody had that, but I'm definitely familiar with those things. Yeah, it's cool.
Cool. You understand what I'm describing. Oh, listeners, I hope you do as well. But like, it reminded me of one of those. And like, I think my sister had one when we were growing up, and I do remember like enjoying playing with it and then her getting mad at me. So oops. But like, it was a cute little song and it was an adorable little song. So Dee Dee walks up and asks what's going on with his shoes, and we get a beautiful play on words, and Joe just goes, oh, we do learn that his name is Joe, by the way. We officially do learn that Tom Hanks's name is Joe. I was right about that. I feel pretty good with the fact that I guessed that the title character name in the title was also possibly, you know, the actor who was on the poster. I didn't have to stretch very far, but I've been wrong before, so I'm going to take the win. But she walks up, asks Joe what's wrong, and Joe goes, I'm losing my soul. And I was like, ah, fun play on words, because he's talking about his shoe, but actually he's talking about his soul. And Dee Dee asks how he is. Joe is very tired, and Dee Dee hands him something, saying each one gets 5 catalogs. Joe cannot do this. He only has 12 catalogs left altogether. Dee Dee looks concerned and then walks away. And then in walks Mr. Waturi, and he looks like he is on a mission. And as he's entering this room, he says he'll take care of it. Joe explains that he isn't feeling very well, and Mr. Waturi asks, what's new? You're never good. And Joe's like, it's a problem, and Joe has another doctor's appointment today. Mr. Waturi is upset by that, and I'm just like, the man is sick. Why are you being so cruel? He needs to go to the doctor. He isn't feeling well. Why are you being so mean? Waturi then asks about the catalogs. Dee Dee literally left the room like half a second ago, and she didn't have time to walk to the door, tell Waturi that Joe didn't have enough catalogs, and then Waturi to say, I'll take care of it, to then have enough time to come into the room. Like, not enough time has passed for this to happen, based on the edit. It's very weird. I don't like it. There should have been like at least like 3 seconds. Just add 3 seconds to the film and I wouldn't be mad at this. But like, I don't know. I feel like it would take Dee Dee more than half a second to even just leave the room. It's a fairly large room, as you see when Waturi enters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like,
I forget who directed this, but yeah, no, it's somebody's comedic vision, you know, in a dark sort of a way. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it works, and I do enjoy that it keeps the pacing up. It doesn't make us wait. It like, it keeps it moving, right?
It's true. It's very true.
But at the same time, let Dee Dee walk out the room. So Joe says that he told Mr. Waturi 3 weeks ago, and then he told him 2 weeks ago. And Waturi asks, did you tell me last week? Joe did not. Joe thought he knew. And in Joe's defense, he did let him know. It's not Joe's fault that he's out of catalogs. He has told Mr. Waturi with ample warning, I need more catalogs.
Oh boy! So it's like, why are you flying off the handle at me? What is wrong?
Exactly, right? Doesn't make sense. Waturi. No. Continue.
Okay. Sorry. It's that thing which we've kind of, or Anka, you've sort of said already. But one of his lines on the phone, just to speak to how grating he is of a character, is, I'm not arguing that with you. Just over and over. And he has a great line. Yeah, he has a great line that's coming up, but we'll work into that. But it's just like,
we'll
I'm
get
not
to
arguing
it.
that with you. I'm not arguing that with you.
Nah. So Ituri says that that's not good enough. He placed him in charge of the entire advertising library. This room. It's a pretty bleak room. It's got one desk, a file cabinet, a shelving unit, and some type of bin and some pipes. It's a depressing room. Joe explains to Ituri that he puts the orders to the printer, not him, and this is the way that Ituri wanted it. Ituri says that Joe isn't competent, it is a very technical job, and that is why Ituri has to do it himself. And Ituri says that he wants to make him an assistant manager, but Joe isn't flexible. Joe is like, I do not feel inflexible. And Ituri asks again about the doctor. Joe says again, I don't feel good. And Ituri just goes, so what? You think I feel good? And I was like, you know what? I kind of feel that. And then this is a beautiful line. Is this the line that you're alluding to?
This is the one.
So Ituri says, you think I feel good? Nobody feels good. After childhood, it's a fact of life. Doesn't let it bother him, and it doesn't let him interfere with his job. What?
So what? I don't let it bother me.
I don't let it bother me. Oh, it's beautiful, beautifully delivered. And I did say, I had a note here, that, I mean, you do work in a crappy factory, but I do have a feeling that Joe is actually terminally ill, and he either isn't telling Mr. Ituri that he's terminally ill, or he doesn't know yet, and we are going to find out very soon. So he's either not telling Ituri so that he doesn't lose his medical insurance while he is terminally ill, or he just doesn't know. One of those two has to be true. I think it's more that he doesn't know, but it's just a hunch. We shall see. But Ituri then asks about the lamp and is like, what's this? Is the light not good enough for you? And Joe explains that the fluorescence affect him, makes him feel blotchy and puffy. Ituri tells him to get rid of the light. It's not his bedroom, but an office. Maybe if he starts treating it like a job and not a welfare hospital, he'll shape up. And he wants the catalogs.
Mr. Ituri, you're really mean.
Yeah, Watori's so mean. Like, I don't want to work for a man like this. I feel sorry for Joe. I feel bad for him. Like, you know, sure, I understand, like, hey man, like, you can't have the light here, that's not allowed. But also, is it bothering anybody? Is it in anybody else's personal space? No. Is it like he's sharing an office and it's causing problems for other people? No, he has the room all to himself. So, like, who's it really hurting? Nobody. Let the man keep his lamp.
I think Joe even says this. I want to say that there's not that much subtext to this movie because the characters just say a lot of the subtext. You know, there's a scene that's, you know, coming, like, it's a pivotal scene later on when Joe's out of the office, that is, for the moment, and you're just like, yeah, that's what we're thinking, or you feel the, you know, the dogma of movie making come across, you know, of like, here's
you
the message,
do.
Here's the thing, but we're going to send it up somewhat, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's very interesting. It did remind me a bit of, like, the Barbie movies that I've been going through. Ladies and gentlemen, let me explain, because Joe versus the Volcano versus, like, Barbie Fairytopia, very different films.
Oh,
but
so Anke, what? Yeah, you've been watching those movies for what's the project you're doing?
It's for this podcast. I've now watched Barbie Fairytopia. I have now watched Barbie Fairytopia Mermaidia and Barbie magic of the rainbow. They got rid of Fairytopia. They were like, you should know what this is by now. But no, it's for this podcast because one of my closest friends, Griffin, was like, hey, this is what I want to do on your show. And I had reached out to some of my closest friends and I had been like, hey guys, like you're some of my closest friends. At some point, I'd love for you to come on to my podcast and come be a guest because, you know, you have been my friend for 13, 14 years. I don't know how long. Like, we've all kind of lost track at this point. So, like, we've been friends for almost half of our lives, if not more. And I was just like, great, come on. And Griffin was like, I want to do this film. And I'm like, I've never heard of this film. It's a kid's film. But back to how it's kind of similar is everyone just says what is on their mind. Like, isn't a lot of subtext. Everything is kind of just laid out for you. And there's not a lot of, like, guessing of what's going on. It's either, hi, this is what's happening. But it's not like one of those mystery ones. Like, it's not like Silence of the Lambs, which is a show that I have done, a film that I have done on this show. My bad. Words are hard, ladies and gentlemen. But it's a film that I also did. Whereas like that one, there was much more to guess of like, what are they actually trying to say? What's the subtext that they're trying to lean into? What's the hint that they're giving us? That ain't there in either Barbie movies or this one, from my understanding to this point.
But also with Silence of the Lambs, like why are we an extreme close up on Anthony Hopkins? Like, it's really scary. But
why,
you know,
are
I mean,
you not?
Yeah, why are we not?
That's the real question. I follow an Instagram page called Puberty. I think like it's a very, very large page. Just I guess a free shout out to them, why not? But they had a thing recently of like who are the greatest villains of all time, and like they had their followers vote, and Hannibal Lecter didn't even make it out of the first round, and I was sad. I've only seen the film once, but I'm like, he deserves to at least get out of the first round of the competition. I don't remember who he was up against, but I'm like, he deserves to at least get out of the first round.
Just based on that mask and his demeanor, you just think, yeah, there's something iconic, really, really about that.
Right? I mean, like, it's one of the only things, until I watched the film, it was one of the only things that I had ever known about the film was the mask. It was the only thing that I really knew was the mask and a couple of other things, but I don't remember what they are off the top of my head. Listeners, if you're curious on those episodes, they're very fun episodes. Go check them out wherever you listen to podcasts. Anyway, back to Joe versus the Volcano, because that's what we're actually here to talk about. But Joe tells Waturi, order the catalogs. And Waturi turns and goes, you need to watch yourself. And he's just like, you need to get yourself into a flexible frame or there is no place for you. And Waturi starts to leave. But before he leaves, he forces Joe to take the light off of his desk before he exits. I do not like Waturi. I hope he gets what's coming to him. That's all I have to say about that. So, Dee Dee then comes back in. She has a paper. And she asks Joe, why do you let Waturi talk to you like this? And then Joe doesn't answer. Dee Dee asks what's wrong with him. Joe doesn't feel good. And then she says, what's the matter with you? I don't know. And then Joe covers his eyes. And then we transition to him still covering his eyes, but now it's a different woman calling for Mr. Banks. I'm assuming Mr. Banks is him and his name is Joe Banks. So
that's right. That is right.
Yeah. Like, that wasn't a very hard guess. You see him. But I just wanted to give credit. It's a beautiful transition because, like, you just have him go and cover his eyes in the office, and then you transition to the same position, but now we're in a new setting. And I just thought it was a beautifully well done transition. Like, you know, you're still in the same physical stature and physical nature, but now you're in a new setting. You can continue the story. I just wanted to point out a beautiful transition right there. So Joe then uncovers his eyes and is told that Dr. Ellison will see him now. And this is the most unwelcoming waiting room I have ever seen. It has four fluorescent tube lights, plastic chairs, and just pure white walls. Like, it looks terrible. Like, nobody wants to be there. And then you see the office through it, and it looks like a fancy study in, like, you know, some really nice, like, 1600s castle mansion that was built. And, like, you know, it's the Tudors, and it's, you know, just really nice books all the way up, leather seats. And I'm like, really? Really? You couldn't take a little bit of that funding and put it into, like, I don't know, a slightly better waiting room for your patients?
We'll talk about funding when it comes to Joe's apartment, which we have not got to quite yet, but there's a great thing I can tell you about that. But yeah, I was going to say, this office looks really, really nice. You know, I was going to say the waiting room is all ugly and bad, like movie bad. You know, we put budget into this room, but we want this to look so good, so bad, and we want this office to be really nice. So there's like a, you know, this doctor got money.
Oh, yeah. And this doctor don't really care about his patients. So Joe feels blotchy, puffy, has a sore throat ever since he left the fire department about 8 years ago. And in the fire department, Joe's job was to put out fires. It was a dangerous job. There was some rough stuff, but all in all, he came out okay. And the hard part, he says, is when I started never feeling good and then he had to quit. And I was like, okay, so did he catch something that's slowly killing him? Like, did the smoke affect his lungs? Something like that. Like, you know, is it maybe cancer? It was my first thought of, like, okay, he worked as a firefighter and, you know, thanks for his service. And, like, you know, he did that. But also, like, you know, when you're doing that for years and years on end, it is possible that, like, you know, something gets caught in your lungs and it then develops into something. So Dr. Ellison says that the test results have returned. And he asks, is it cancer? No. Something wrong with blood or urine? No. And everything's fine. But Joe has a brain cloud. It is a black fog of tissue running right down the center of his brain. It's very rare, and the spread is at a very regular rate. It is very destructive, and it is incurable. Joe gets up, moves towards the fire, and then is told you have about 6 months left to live. It's not painful. You won't feel any pain, but your brain will simply just fail, followed abruptly by his body. 4.5 months to 5 months of perfect health is left. And Joe asks, what do you mean by this? I don't feel good now. And Dr. Ellison explains that Joe is a hypochondriac. Nothing is actually wrong with him, and nothing that is wrong with him has to do with any of the symptoms. The doctor guesses that the experiences in the fire department were traumatic, as he experienced death and imminent death multiple times on several occasions, and he survived. But the cumulative anxiety of those brushes with death left him very fearful about his physical person. And Joe is still wrapping his head around all of this, and he's like, okay, so I'm not sick, except for this terminal degree, which has no symptoms, and the only reason that they found out that he even had this terminal degree was because of insisting on having so many tests done that they found the problem. And that's a scary thing to think about, just like, you know, if you don't necessarily know that something's wrong with you, because, you know, you don't always test for everything. It's also understandable. So, you know, good for him, though, that, like, they did actually find out what was wrong with him.
Yeah, no, it's the heaviness of this movie, because it's also like you understand. I mean, we know this takes place in hyper reality. This isn't the real world, because like he's terminally ill, but he's not terminally ill necessarily with something real. Because you have a brain cloud. There's a black fog of tissue running right down the center of your brain.
Yeah, I'm pretty
And
sure that's not a real disease.
No. But it's like shorthand for, like some sort of cancer, or even like an aneurysm or something. I don't even know. I'm no medical practitioner, but yeah, I think it's like we want to have like a dark side to this movie, but we're not just going to say that Joe has cancer, because that's really tasteless. But yeah.
Yeah. No, very fair. So Joe's in disbelief. He's like, what am I gonna do? And the doctor says, well, if you have savings, I'd recommend taking a trip. He doesn't. He only has a few hundred bucks left because he has spent everything that he has on doctors. And then the doctor suggests, well, maybe you could get a second opinion. And I wrote in my notes, did you not just hear what he said? He has no money left to afford a second opinion.
Not a second medical opinion.
Yeah. So Joe's like, I knew it. Well, I didn't, but I did. And then he asks again, what is he gonna do? And the doctor says, you have time left. His best advice is live it well. And we see Joe leaving. He is shattered. He stands by the door, and there's a lady with a massive dog that comes up. And he tentatively reaches out, pets the cute little puppy, gives the lady a hug as well, and then they just keep going on their merry way. Joe gets in his car. There's the only one car there because, that's how it works. And he then heads back to the office and sees the flower that was crushed by the shoe at the beginning of the film. And Joe tries to lift it back up and bring it back to life.
It's sort of like, I'm going to bring this thing back to life. There's futility in what I'm doing right here, because we can't change that, but I'd like to fix this. Why do we want to fix this? Because I'm not able to fix myself.
Yeah, no, definitely. Wonderful. Well, we're gonna take a quick break for an intermission, and then we'll come right back. Hello, everyone. I hope you are all enjoying this episode of Post Finale. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. And if you enjoy the episode and you are having a good time, please make sure to hit the subscribe button if you're listening on YouTube, and hit that like button. And please be sure to follow the show if you're listening on any other app like Spotify, Apple Music, etc. It doesn't matter where you're listening for us. It just means so much that you are listening to this episode. And thank you all so much. It really does help out the show and the channel. So thank you all very much for tuning in. Now, if you are enjoying the content and you want to gain access to more content, you can do so by signing up for our Patreon. And speaking of Patreon, we have an update for our patrons. And the update is that Lucy Sadler, thank you so much for upgrading to production manager. It really means a lot to us. Thank you so much. And for anyone else that wants to sign up, gain access to bonus content, you can see tier lists, you can see notes that we have, some bonus videos, some bonus audios, different things like that. You can suggest films that we do. All sorts of things like that can be found on our Patreon, which you can find at patreon.com/coopforge. So that's patreon.com/co_opforge. And thank you so much to anyone who is even considering this. It really does help us out a lot, and thank you. Now, be sure to also follow us on social media for Post Finale. You can find us at Post Finale Pod on Instagram and Facebook. And you can also follow Co-op Forge, where we post a lot of content as well, not just about Post Finale, but for all the shows that we host here on Co-op Forge. So that includes Seattle Across the Pond, and that includes Flip the Scripts. So if you want to follow that one on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook, it is at Co-op Forge. So at @CO_OPFORGE. And it really does help. The best way to help the show in a non-monetary way, if you want to do that too, is just to talk about the show. Word of mouth is the best way to help grow the show. Just reach out to a friend and be like, hey, you love films. Or, hey, I know that you need a reason to watch more films. Check out this show where the host is an actor who hasn't seen anything and he's confused most of the time on what's going on. It's silly. It's a fun time. He's really humble. It's a fun, great way to help the show grow and talk about us on social media. It really, really does help. Thank you all so much to anyone who has done this in the past, anyone who will do this in the future. It really does mean the world to us. But that's enough of me rambling on. Once again, if you want to follow us on social media, it's at @PostFinalePod and at @CoopForge, CO_OPFORGE. And if you want to sign up for the Patreon, again, there is zero pressure to do so. Listening to the show means so much to us. But if you want to do that, it can be found at patreon.com/CoopForge. So that's patreon.com/CO_OPFORGE. And let's get back to the show. So Joe heads back into the office and Mr. Watori is saying someone is wrong. And then he sees Joe, checks his watch. And Watori says that if he said that, he would have been wrong. He's been given a new group of three sentences to repeat for a little bit. Joe goes to put his hat on the rack. Instead, he throws it in the bin. Then he grabs a paper out of Dee Dee's typewriter, takes it, crumples it, throws it into the bin. He starts to goad the other man in the office, like, come on, come on, like, you can do it. Like, kind of like you do with, like, a little puppy when it's trying to, like, learn to walk, or, like, you know, when it's too scared to, like, go down the stairs and you're trying to, like, goad it to coming down the stairs. Like, that's kind of what he was doing to this little person. It was weird, but interesting. Watori sees all of this happening and says, I'll call you back. I have something going on over here. So Joe then starts attacking this mannequin thing and starts arm wrestling with it. Watori informs Joe that he's been at lunch for 3 hours, and Joe just walks over with the hand, starts smacking all sorts of stuff on Watori's desk, and then starts hitting Watori with this arm. And Watori grabs the arm, saying, this is company property. And he tells Joe not to touch it. And what Joe has done is now Joe has abandoned the arm, but he has now gone to the main drain. And Joe either opening or closing the main drain. I appreciate that he doesn't know which one it is. I'm like, let's go.
Joe,
let's
don't touch out. That. What are you doing? Sorry, I'm kidding.
I'm opening or closing the main drain. It's just, it's got to be done. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like, I got to do this.
life is short, and it's like, I'm just going to do this. Like, nothing happened. You ever know, you always wonder what happened when I did that?
Yeah, no. I mean, Joe is truly disappointed. He's been waiting for a while to figure out what happened if he did do it, and nothing did. So, here's my question. Is that actually the main drain? Did he close the main drain? Is something gonna happen later in the movie because of that main drain? Maybe he didn't open the main drain. Maybe he closed the main drain. And then it's gonna become a blockage. Who knows? We will find out. I am invested because I feel like something has to happen to this main drain. I don't know what that is, though. But I want to know what happens to this main drain.
Oh.
So, Watori asks him what's wrong. Joe just says brain cloud. And Watori's confused. Joe's like, ah, forget about it. And tells Frank Watori, his first name is Frank, that he is quitting. And Watori is like, today? That is correct. And Watori says, that's great. Don't come looking for a reference from me. And Joe's just like, I won't. And then he goes, Robinson Crusoe. Is that a book?
That one is, yeah.
That one is. Okay. I didn't clock if it was a book. I know that the other ones that he pulled out were. So Waturi's going off saying, you know what, you blew this job. Meanwhile, Joe doesn't care. He's just pulling out his stuff. He's like Romeo and Juliet, The Odyssey, a ukulele. And Joe then reveals he has worked here for 4.5 years, and it's a job he probably could have done in 6 months. So that leaves 4 years left over. Fair enough. So Joe says he has them now like gold in his hand. And then Joe gifts Dee Dee the lamp. And Waturi says, if you're leaving, leave. You'll get your check, and I promise you'll be easy to replace. Before he leaves, Joe pauses, and under his breath, he mutters, I shouldn't say this. And Waturi asks what he's muttering. And then Joe goes off and he says, this life, what a joke, this situation, this room. You look terrible, Mr. Waturi. You look like a bag of shit stuffed in a cheap suit. Not that anybody could look good under these zombie lights. I can feel them sucking the juice from my eyeballs. Suck, 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 suck. Dee Dee starts laughing, having a great time. And then he just continues. He's just like, 300 bucks a week. For 300 bucks a week, I lived in this sink, this used rubber. And Waturi's just like, watch it. There is a woman here. And I do love that how Joe just turns around and he's like, do you think that I am unaware of this? Do you think I am unaware that there is a woman here? I can smell her like a flower, taste her like sugar on his tongue. When she is 20 feet away, I can hear the fabric of her dress when she moves in her chair. Which, honestly, Joe, like, you gotta go get your ears checked, because if you can hear that from 20 feet away and a closed door, like, you might have some superpowers.
This is like Daredevil or something.
Yeah. It's just like, he truly is the original Daredevil. I don't know when the Daredevil comics came out, but like, he is
No,
Daredevil.
I just, yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, maybe just because of what he's saying, like, go Joe. But no, I mean, if you've seen the TV show, or even any of the movies they did, like, Daredevil is a blind man, and as a result, all his senses are heightened. So it's really, yeah, that's what I'm getting at. So yeah, you've got like sonar going on, Joe.
Exactly. Well done, Joe. Hey, that brain cloud unlocked something new for him.
Maybe it could have.
Maybe, we don't know. So he then says that he hasn't done anything about it. I've gone all day not saying, not taking a chance for 300 a week. The coffee tastes like shit, like arsenic. If the lights don't give him a headache, he must be dead. So let's arrange a funeral. He is going off. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're gonna quit a job and you do not have any intention of ever needing to have contact of anybody from that job again, take notes. I'm just saying, he's leaving in a glorious fashion. He's like, I got nothing to lose. Let's go. So I'm here for it. But Waturi is telling him to leave. Frank says he's telling him nothing. And Joe asks himself, why have I put up with you? I can't imagine. But I know it's fear. I've been too afraid to live my life. So I sold it to you for $300 frickin' dollars a week. He then grabs Waturi, pushes him into a corner, and then says, you're lucky I don't kill you. You're lucky I don't rip your throat out. Dee Dee, on the other hand, loving this. She's like, yes, please, I'm here for it, laughing, having the time of her life. The other guy, who never even got introduced, is mortified in the background. It's great. It's fantastic. Joe just says, I'm gonna leave you here because what can be worse than that? And then he walks out the door. But then he turns around. He returns. He walks in and asks Dee Dee out for dinner. Dee Dee says, yeah, okay. Wow, what a change. And that's it. Joe has successfully left the job.
I was thinking, Ankit, there's so much to talk about, so far with this movie, but perhaps the reason Joe wanted his light, one, it's sort of like a night light, so there's like a childlike sort of element to it almost. It's like your comfort light to sleep or something. But yeah, perhaps with the zombie lighting just sucking the juice from his eyeballs, it's like I want something real, something nice. I don't want this anymore.
Oh, the imagery in this whole speech, just beautiful. I mean, the zombie lights, the sucking the juice
Yes.
from the eyeballs, the coffee tasting like arsenic, the woman who
Yeah.
he can taste on his tongue like sugar, which is a weird analogy, but like, cool. He's trying to be sweet.
I need
Like,
to this is sorry, yeah, this is to my dismay. I think it's like going back to 1984. I haven't seen the movie they did. I know they've made at least one film, and there's the book which I began to read and I was enjoying very much. I just never quite got back around to it again, but there's a bit early on that's quite like this where you're hearing the thoughts of our main guy. And he has thoughts like that that are just completely wild in every given direction, you know?
Definitely. So, no, it's so much fun. I'm here for it. I have a prediction to give before we end this episode of what I think is going to be happening. But this is all we're covering in terms of the film on this episode. Is there anything else before we get into my prediction, as I do at the end of the first episode of a movie? Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up of what we've covered so far? Did I miss anything? Because it's possible. Any fun facts, any, cool design things that you want to bring up?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think. Did you notice the song at the beginning? I think when Joe's walking into work at the start.
So yeah, there were two very distinct songs. I don't remember exactly how they went, but I did feel like both of them fit. You had one at the very beginning of the film as he's walking into work, and one as he's leaving the doctor's office.
Yeah. Because offhand, there's like two lyrics that come to mind. One is another day older and deeper in debt, kind of thinking about how he spent all his money on going to see a doctor, for one. I don't know if that plays off of that scene. It would make sense if it did do. But the other thing is the song about what is it at the beginning? It's where it says, I owe my soul to the company's store, and the company's store is the home of the rectal probe, and the soul, it's talking about like it was sort of a play on his soul as a human being, but also the destroyed soul of his shoe. So I owe my destroyed self to this job, to this thing, and I haven't risen above my station, and I'm trapped. There is like that's sort of what we've been sowing into the movie so far, and it's from the brain cloud doctor scene onwards. I think Joe is about to reject all of that and be like, let's just burn everything down and leave and do what I can while I'm still here.
Yeah, so I definitely agree. Like, I'm here for it. I'm here for Unhinged Joe. Let's see what happens. I think what is possibly happening in the rest of the film is Joe is going to be presented with some opportunity to go fight a volcano. And I think he's going to go and like go fight this volcano. Maybe one of his old firefighting buddies like comes in to like get him to come help fight this volcano. I do still think he's fighting the volcano. And, you know, he's gonna just go live life, enjoy it, do stuff that he likes to do, have fun while they're out in, you know, whatever tiny town that they're in, fighting this volcano on some random island that probably doesn't exist. And at the end of the film, he's going to find out that he actually isn't terminally ill, and he's going to get together with Dee Dee. I think that's what's going to happen. We'll have to wait and see. I do not know. But William, thank you so much for joining on this episode. If listeners want to find you doing stuff in the world, how can they find you? Where can they follow you, etc.?
Well, I have my social media stuff linked on YouTube. My YouTube is William Hayward Painter, and that's also me on Instagram and Twitter, formerly X, formerly known as Twitter. It's at Hayward Painter. And I think that's me. Yeah. So, and also William Hayward Painter on Facebook as well. But the key one is my YouTube page is what I'm adding to. So no, folks, feel free to have a look at that one. I'm, you know, be really excited, you know, to cross pollinate, you know, and just, you know, I'll promote your stuff as well, Ankit, on my side. So yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you very much. Listeners, the link to his YouTube channel will be down in the description below, whether you're listening on a podcast app or you're listening on YouTube. If you look at the episode description, you can find the link to William's YouTube channel. William, thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to having you back on next week's episode, where we talk about more shenanigans that Joe gets up to now that he is free from his soulless job. And until then, listeners, thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch y'all later.